Okay, well, thank you, Steve. I've got about 20 minutes, so I'm going to have to be stark on my topic. I should say, Steve said there are 20 of us in the Cambridge Journal of Economics, or more than 20, actually. Why am I giving this talk? It's because we have a time-honored tradition that all the work that no one else wants to do goes to whoever is absent from meeting. And I've missed all the meetings organizing this conference, and so here I am. Why the topic? It's been suggested to me, well, you will have noticed the word ontology has been creeping into the Cambridge Journal increasingly over the last few years, and it's been suggested to me that not everyone is sure why or is necessarily comfortable with this, and that it might be a good idea to say why I think it's a good idea, so I will. I know people have different reservations, and I think probably included in that group are those who are especially interested in policy. As Steve said, the Cambridge Journal has always been, it was set up to concern itself with realism, with relevance, with being realistic, and perhaps especially with the kind of practical relevance, a policy orientation. There are a lot of people who send papers to us or of us who are clearly quite impatient to get on with changing the world to make it a better place. I think Marx, at the ripe old age of 27, said things like, philosophers have only interpreted the world in various ways. The point is to change it, and a lot of people were very keen to get on with the changing. I think we need to put more time into the interpreting, so that's what I'm going to be talking about, and especially more time for ontology today. Now, it may be that what I got to say, everyone here agrees with. I always think everyone's going to agree with what I say, but it never seems to happen. If you do agree with it, if what I'm saying is obvious, then at most I'm going to be wasting about 15 more minutes of your time. But I know, looking at Ben Fine, even when I say positive things about people, I get it wrong. And the chances of you all agreeing with me are probably not huge. Ontology, as I guess everyone knows, is the study of being, the nature of stuff, the basic constituents of reality. Social ontology, the study of the basic stuff of social reality, fundamentals of social reality. The way I use the term ontology is much the same as people like Marx, Keynes, Veblen use the word metaphysics, the study of the nature of being. The first thing to say about it is that we all do it. You've all done it today. In making your way here, you've seen things in front of you, and you've looked at them, worked out their nature, and you've acted accordingly. You've acted differently according to whether the thing in front of you was a bush, a bicycle, a car, a student, a rhinoceros, or whatever. We all do ontology. I doubt many of you tried to get in through the walls. You worked out where the door was and came in. We all do it. It's not an option. Ontology is fundamental to the sciences like physics and biology. I say that because I have colleagues who forever have told me in the past they don't do philosophy, they do science. And of course, ontology is a part of philosophy. In fact, I'll go as far as to say most of the interesting questions in physics, most of the big debates, are over the nature of stuff. The debates that divided Einstein from the Copenhagen School were over the nature of a quantum. These days, quantum fields are the things people spend their time looking at. Forever, people have asked, what's the nature of stuff? What's the nature of reality? Whether it's earth, air, fire, water, the constituents, whether it's electrons, whether it's now quarks, or excitations of quantum fields, it's the nature of stuff. Current theories in the nature of stuff, it's excitations of quantum fields, seems to imply there's no such thing as mass, so hunt is on to identify the nature of mass. There's not enough energy in the universe, and yet the universe seems to be expanding. There's not enough energy to explain it, so they've invented dark matter and dark energy, and the hunt is on to identify its nature, and so on. And it makes a difference to how they go about doing physics. Their answer to the question of what is mass, the Higgs boson field particle, is one major reason they built the Hadron Collider, the electron particle accelerator at CERN, and so on. Methods are tailored to ontology. We have noticed in our field of subject, methods come first, mathematical models come first, and give me the question comes after. So ontology is fundamental to the natural sciences. Of course, in the natural sciences, it's pursued in an explicit, systematic, sustained way, as opposed into ordinary life. We don't. And what I'm interested in, when we use the word ontology in the CJE and everywhere else, it's doing ontology in an explicit, systematic, and sustained way. But although that's absent from economics, or much of it today, it didn't used to be. If you open the back page of the Cambridge Journal, it says this journal was set up in the tradition of a list of people, and the first two, and I think the two most important names there, are Marx and Keynes. Marx and Keynes did ontology. Ontology was fundamental to what they did. I would almost say Capital by Marx was a book on ontology. I think everyone knows it starts with the question, what is a commodity? But he asks, what is the nature of the commodity? He does ontology. Obviously, by starting the commodity, he's restricting the focus to capitalism, and he sets out his account of the nature of capitalism. But from the commodity, he goes into different forms of value, money, labor power, and so on. It is ontology. In fact, my memory's bad. I wrote down how he summarizes the first few chapters of Capital. He writes, a commodity appears at first sight an extremely obvious, trivial thing, but its analysis brings out that it's a very strange thing, abounding in metaphysical subtleties. He also adds theological niceties, but he's doing ontology. Keynes, too, did ontology. Most economists are taught, well, they're not taught Keynes at all anymore, not in Cambridge anyway, but when they were taught Keynes, it was mostly the general theory. But prior to the general theory, Keynes did a lot of stuff. In fact, I was talking to Rod O'Donnell at dinner last night, and apparently most of what he wrote, he was written at Eton. I think Rod's about to publish about 6 volumes of Keynes' writings when he was at Eton. Anyway, he did a lot. Most of Keynes' work is not yet published. Much of the earlier stuff is on philosophy. But even amongst the published works, he wrote a book called A Treatise on Money. It's divided into sections, which he calls books. And the first book is called The Nature of Money. And there he sets out the nature of money. He does ontology. Prior to that, he wrote a treatise on probability. There, his question is, what must the world be like such that probability judgments have any relevance? What is the nature of reality so that we can make sense of this reliance on probability? It was a response to G. Moore's Principia Ethica, where Moore's recommendations for ethical action was based effectively on probability judgments. Keynes said, well, the world has to be a particular way for this to be a correct strategy, and it came to the conclusion the world wasn't appropriate for probability judgments. That same ontological analysis was used later when he criticized the newly developing econometrics. Ontology is there in the tradition, the history of the journal. It's not a new thing. And what's more, we all, as economists, all of us in this room, do ontology. It's implicit in every method we adopt, every policy stance we take, every theory we report has ontological presuppositions. We all do ontology. But if this is so, the question you might ask is, well then why are you talking about it? We always do ontology. What's the big deal? And the point is, for the last 70 years or so, it's been left implicit. Rather than doing it explicitly in the fashion of Marx and Keynes and Veblen and others, we leave our ontological presuppositions implicit and unexamined. We rush straight in with methods. Methods come first, and they obviously carry ontological presuppositions. We rush into policy analysis without asking the ontological question. So we can't, and we don't avoid ontological presuppositions. The result of leaving ontology implicit is bad ontology. The ontology that goes with the theories and methods that we use is basically untenable, it's incoherent. I've criticized mathematical modeling enough, and I won't spend time on it now, but the critique I've made of mathematical modeling is actually in Keynes. It's Keynes's critique of the emphasis on probability judgments of a treatise of probability. The sort of mathematical methods economists use presupposed correlations, regulations of the form whenever X, then Y. To guarantee them, the world has been made of atoms, things that under conditions X always do the same Y. Think of a wind-up doll. Put it down, it walks forward. That's the ontology of mainstream economics. Has to be isolated atoms, otherwise a passing dog or something called not the dog over there, and you can't predict where it'll end up. You can't predict or deduce. If you want to use the methods of mathematical modeling, you have an ontology, a world of isolated atoms. This is Keynes's terms. He called them legal atoms in the treatise on probability, but the same ontology. I think it's easy once you make it explicit to see that the world is not at all like that. But it's, and as I say, this critique is, it's been repeated often enough, I won't go any further. But it's the case with the world economics that there's an implicit ontology. And I wanted to come to policy because there's a lot of people I know who are interested in policy. Whilst, in a sense, the mainstream pose as mathematical modelers, as scientists, thinking, we don't care about the world, this is the way we do it. Amongst policymakers, there are people who want to improve the world, make it a better place for everyone. It's a different kind of person. And I know from my own experience within policy modelers, there is a lot of impatience with philosophy, impatience with ontology, the point, let's get on and change the world. Now, I won't mention anyone in the room, so I thought that would be unfair. So I took a quote from a mainstream guy, I guess, but still a policy person, Robert Shillen, when he got the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Science in 2013. He wrote, "The feature of economics is that it's necessarily focused on policy rather than the discovery of fundamentals. Nobody really cares much about economic data except as a guide to policy. Economic phenomena do not have the same intrinsic fascination for us as the internal resonances of the atom or the functioning of the vesicles and other organelles of the living cell. We judge economics by what it can produce." Well, actually, for the last 70 years, it hasn't produced much. It's been pretty much an explanatory failure. But Shiller is right. Economists are not much fascinated by what he calls fundamentals, by ontology. But that lack of fascination doesn't mean it's avoidable. Every time you put forward a policy proposal, whether it's to oppose austerity, put forward Keynesian reflation policies, whatever, you're taking implicitly a perspective, a position on human nature. You can't say this is policy is good without having some presumption about good for who, what are these people for whom it's good, what's their nature. Typically, if I look around at most policy stances, one of the presuppositions is that everyone's everywhere the same. What is good for one is good for everyone. Most policy measures, too, presuppose that people pretty much like the atoms of mathematical modeling. Doing this, whatever it is, tax cuts, increased expenditure, always leads to that effect, whenever this and that. People are treated, in effect, like atoms. Assumptions about the nature of people, what's good for them, what they need, and how they respond to changes are implicit, whether recognized or not. And everything stands to be improved by making what's implicit explicit. And different accounts of the way the world is and the way people are lead to different approaches to doing economics. To very briefly give an alternative, this happens to be the view that I do accept, but it's just one alternative. I mean, we do, I think, flourish. The goal is human flourishing. As human beings, we do have things in common, but even that's contentious. There are various post-structuralists who deny the fact of human nature, or else we're just all so different that there's no point in talking about trying to improve things. We do have things in common, like a need, capacity to enter into social being, to enter into non-social being, to acquire language, and so on. but we're also very different. We're obviously of different ages, different sexualities. We grew up in different cultures. Our brains, the links in our brains, develop differently. We turn into very different types of beings. So we need a world which we flourish in our differences. Marx said as much in the Communist Manifesto. We need a world in which the free flourishing of each is a condition for the free flourishing of all. We need to do the ontology of human beings before we know what policies are good for human flourishing. But also, we need to know about the nature of social reality in order that we can skillfully, capably change it, transform it. I tend to think social reality is not of a nature that you get correlations, event regularities. The world is open. People are not atomistic. But underneath the events, there are deeper structures, social relations, institutional structures, which can be transformed. To cut a long story so short, I think the goal of policy is nothing to do with changing exogenous variables like tax rates, interest rates, whatever, in order to control, predict the future, but to transform the structures of reality to facilitate a world of emancipated human beings. But the goal is to identify obstacles that stand in the path to human flourishing. Obstacles like, obviously, one gender group oppressing another gender group, indigenous people oppressing immigrants, class relations, and so on. It's a very different approach. It's not only different in the sense that instead of ameliorating events and predicting control versus social transformation and emancipation, but on the second approach, in the first approach, most of the things that are interesting on the second approach are taken fixed. The structures of society have to be treated as more or less fixed so you can look at how to change one event to change another event if you think they're correlated. On the second approach, when I defend, everything's up for grabs. And for example, I think capitalism is an obstacle to human flourishing. So the question comes, how do we transform capitalism? Can we transform it in one country or is it the whole world over? Patriarchy is, I think, many forms of institutionalized religions are obstacles to flourishing. If capitalism is an obstacle and if you cannot build a good society in one country alone, questions arise, what do we do now? I think the answer lies in terms of building bubbles, eudaimonic bubbles, bubbles in which people flourish in their own concerns, as it were. I think the Cambridge Journal was set up as one of those bubbles. I think all of us, I'm sure all of us, are in little academic groups which are our own little bubbles in which we are able to do things we can't do in the wider community. And friendships, families, retreats, sector. I think the National Health Service is a form of bubble that's about to burst in this country. Anyway, I put all that forward. I'm sure most people here will disagree with some or all of what I've said. Point is, it makes a difference. Ontology matters. It's naive, foolish even to rush into policy thinking you're avoiding questions of ontology. You're not avoiding them, you're just leaving them implicit. And mostly it means bad accounts, untenable accounts of human nature and society and what can be done to society. Let me sum up then by saying quickly what I'm not saying. I'm not at all saying ontology instead of anything else. It's not ontology instead of theory, policy, methods, empirical work, all other forms of economics. It's not ontology before everything else. It's ontology as well as explicit, sustained, upfront ontology alongside everything else. That's the way it was in the time of Marx, for Marx, it's the way it was for Keynes, it's the way it was for Veblen, for most people up to about 70 years ago, but it's no longer that way. Nowadays, it's method first or rush to policy first. So the ontological term that I'm hoping that some of us are arguing for is to make what's implicit explicit. Once it's explicit, if it ever happens, and of course people in this room make it explicit already, but others don't, Once we've recovered ontology and it's okay again to question the nature of the stuff we're dealing with in the fashion of Marx, Keynes, and so on, we can stop using the word. The word's only been used because it denotes a relative absence. It's that relative absence that needs absenting. Okay.